Howdy, welcome to another episode of Tales from the Pits. This is Brian.
And Andrew.
And we are here today in Fort Worth. Is it Fort Worth, technically? Or?
We're in Fort Worth. We're right smack dab in Fort Worth with...
Zane Chaffee.
And Zane, you are with?
A Sabar Barbecue.
All right.
So let's start off. Sabar, what's the proper pronunciation?
So I guess it depends on your dialect, right? So I speak Urdu fluently. So for me, how I would pronounce it and people that live in Pakistan would pronounce it would be Sabar Barbecue, which means patience, but it doesn't quite roll off the same for everybody. So I think Lane said it the first time. I was like, well, that's how we'll say it then.
Well, I mean, it's easy to remember, though, if you think about supper, but with a B.
Yeah.
For an American dialect, it's like summer.
Yeah,
like
it's funny. I told a coworker that we were coming here this weekend, and he's from Pakistan. And so I showed him your Instagram. He's like, oh, do you know what summer means? And I'm like, yeah, I do, only because it's in your Instagram profile.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, he pronounced it perfectly, of course.
So, yep.
So for us, uninitiated into Urdu, it might be sabar, but sabar is the proper pronunciation
if you
are fluent in the language.
For sure.
So that's obviously one of the unique things about what you're doing here is introducing the flavors of Pakistan that you grew up with into traditional Texas barbecue, which we think is a whole heck of a lot of fun. But there's a long road that got you to this point. Let's start at the beginning. What were some of your early memories, food memories, not necessarily barbecue? What was the food that you grew up with, Zane?
So growing up, my whole family, like my dad and his brothers, they all started a business together. And we were like a very close-knit family because when they came here in the 80s, like, you know, internet, all that stuff was not prevalent. So all you had was family and, you know, a few of your friends. And so food for me, like growing up just in the house, I remember we hardly used to eat out. You know, parents at the time, they weren't like they would eat beef, chicken, everything, but they wouldn't eat it from outside because cross-contamination, this and that. You know, I still remember when we would order a pizza. My mom would always be like, don't cut it. You know, like if it came cut, it's like, oh my God, she's going to raise hell, you know, because like they're using the same cutter for everything.
It's the halal.
Yeah. And so, you know, I would say like growing up, we didn't really eat out a whole lot. But food memories wise, something that like I cherish the most is like my uncles and my dad and everything. They would always get together on holidays. They were workers. They came here with nothing. So they definitely worked like a lot. But days off, they would always get the families together, and they would they'd do kebabs and chicken tikkas. And they'd have kind of like assembly line going. They'd have one of the brothers, my uncle, who'd be like, he had mixed the meat up. Another brother would be putting it on the skewer, and then the third brother would be cooking it on the skewer. So, you know, and that's just what I remember. It was just a little tin, little rectangular box. Rusted up, but you know, they produced really good food out of it. And then just making, I don't want to say like making us fit in, but for the kids, what they would do, because we like hot dogs back then, I don't know if there was any halal or kosher hot dogs even back then. I don't know, they might have been, but we never got to try them. So what they would do to kind of, you know, give us that, I guess, American feel, like, you know, July 4th, it's very American, fireworks, do all that. Instead of putting a hot dog in a hot dog bun, they'd put the kebab in a hot dog bun. So kind of give us that mimic feeling of, oh, you're eating a hot dog. But at the time, you're like, ah, oh, this ain't really a hot dog, you know?
And these are beef kebabs.
Yeah, they were beef. Yeah, they were beef kebabs. And then my another uncle, he was really big into the chicken. He would always make, like, tandoori chicken. You know, he'd had a gas grill. He'd marinate leg quarters, whatever it may be, and then just cook them on gas grill. And, you know, we'd enjoy them. So I would say those are like my food memories really of that I really cherish, and I would say that kind of helped bring out the menu and like just some ideas of what I would want to do whenever I wanted to open up too.
And with those proteins, what sides or other flavors?
So the sides that they would always do, so that's where like the American part of it came in. They'd always do like potato salad, you know, it'd always be like a very American macaroni and cheese. The barbecue sauce, we never had barbecue sauce. That was always raita. It didn't matter like what, they didn't do barbecue sauce. So that was like, for me, condiment growing up was raita. You know, anytime we were doing barbecue, it's like, all right, cool, we're making a raita. So those would be the sides. And then of course, like desserts, it would always be like it would depend, right? So it depend on like what the occasion was. If it was like something that was just like we were off for school and it was like everybody was off, then I feel like they would always give us stuff that was like more Americanized. When I say that, it'd be like, you know, they'd go grab like a cobbler or a pie or something like that. But if it was like a cultural thing, like as Muslims we fast and we in the end of the end of the month there's a celebration. It's like the it's like the equivalent of Christmas for Christians, and we call that Eid. So that when that happened, that's when they would bust out like the Pakistani desserts.
And Eid was about a month ago from here, right?
Actually two Eids. One happens after Ramadan, which is the month of fasting. That changes 10 days every year. So every year it changes 10 years. It gets earlier 10 days.
Is that based on the lunar calendar?
Yeah, based on the lunar calendar. And so this year it's going to start in March around that time. I can't remember exactly. But around March is when it's going to start. So you fast for 29 to 30 days. And when you fast, you can't drink or eat. Like, not even water. I know it's kind of mind-boggling. It is to me, too. Whenever I first started, it's like, dang, how are we going to do this? Especially because summers just went by.
A lot of us in Houston were introduced to that with Akeem Olajuwon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was that. He played playoff games and stuff, right?
Yeah,
for sure. And so, you know, that's one of, like, so it was very, like, dependent on what the occasion was. But I would say the kebabs and the tandoori chicken, that was like a staple. That was just what they were going to do. And of course, like a pizza, you know, and that's what we would also go to that too. But yeah, just, you know, just depending on the occasion is what would kind of, they would decide what the menu was going to be on that. So I would say if it was a cultural, religious kind of thing, then they would be more skewed towards like everything Pakistani stuff. But if it wasn't, then they would kind of try to give us a combination of both.
One thing for those of us to talk about the sauce you were talking about, raita?
Yeah, so raita, it's like a barbecue. So it's like the barbecue sauce of Pakistan. So it's pretty much just yogurt, cilantro, mint, garlic, green chili, salt, cumin. That's all it is. And, you know, just like I said, it doesn't matter. Like barbecue, anywhere you go, beef, chicken, fish, lamb, whatever it is, like that's what they will serve you with, like by default. And then even other like just dishes, like if you're having like a roti or a naan or something, like people that, because it is a developing country, so there's a lot of people that, you know, you're either super rich or super poor. There's no middle class there. So for the lower class, they make a meal out of it. You know, they can't, well, they not necessarily like all the way, but the roti and the naan is cheap. Yogurt is expensive, so what their alternative is, they use all the ingredients, the cilantro, mint, green chili, everything, minus the yogurt, and that's how they eat it. Super delicious. It's just different, different texture. So, you know, that's just kind of where the raita came from. They do a lot of different sauces, but raita is like default sauce there.
And we found out today after having our meal at Subber that raita goes extremely well with Texas barbecue.
Yeah,
which is not something that you'd immediately think of, you know, as, you know, just your traditional Texas barbecue, you know, flavor profiles. But it actually does work remarkably well. Not to jump too far ahead into the menu because we will get into that, you know, a little bit later. But one of the things, I was showing one of my coworkers your menu the other day, and he was saying, oh my gosh, he's got fruit shot as a side. He said, you know, if you go to anyone's house during Ramadan, whenever you break fast, there's going to be fruit shot on the table. And that's like one of the things that immediately jumped out to him is, I mean, he immediately found a connection to your menu, you know, just not even having eaten here, but just reading your menu and seeing like, okay, this is flavors that I'm familiar with, flavors that I grew up with. You know, so it's one of those things that for us Texans that didn't have as much exposure to Middle Eastern and Pakistani flavors, it's a great way to have some familiar flavor with it, with your, you know, brisket and the things that you're used to. But from the other side of it, if you grew up more with Pakistani food and not so much Texas barbecue, this can sort of be a gateway for you from the other end of things. So it's interesting how it kind of works, you know, kind of on both levels with that. Going into your culinary career, How did this all start for you in terms of, I mean, because it's one thing to grow up with food memories and food experiences. It's another thing to start going down a path that leads to a career. So what were the early starts of what has now become your food career?
Pretty much started in 2018. It was a Red River rivalry game. And Zavala's, at the time, we had a furniture family furniture family business, and Zavala's had posted online how they had no line, and you know, I'd been following them. I just couldn't get myself to go wait in line somewhere. But he had posted, and this was when they were still in the bean, the coffee, in the alleyway or whatever. And it's like, all right, we'll go. And we went over there, and they were, first thing, he was very, very hospitable. You know, like, as being a person of a different race, culture, everything, like barbecue, I never really saw it. I would never think I would ever get into barbecue. Like, it's just not, like, it just doesn't mesh. Like, culturally, it's just, it's out there.
Prior to this, was it going to be the furniture business? Was that kind of the direction you were
heading? That's what I was doing, yeah. I mean, I was in that. It was just last year, that's what pays for everything, does everything. We just had somebody who wanted to buy it, and it was like, all right, cool. My dad, I was partner, so it was myself, my dad, and an uncle of ours. My dad, he's in his 60s. My uncle's one is in his 70s. And it was just kind of perfect timing. You know, it was like the right amount. Everybody was happy. And it just kind of fell into my lap. I wasn't planning on leaving that or doing anything. It was just, you know, everything's for sale. So, you know, if it was a good, or not, I mean, maybe not suburb, but because it happened really quick. And once it happened, it just like, all right, cool. I could go do what I want to go do.
Sure.
Which was barbecue. And so it just kind of worked out really kind of perfect situation, really.
So let's go back to that meeting with Joe and team.
Yeah, so we went to Joe's, and they were super. Joe was there, Drew was there. Forgot who else was there. But anyway, we got food and had that first bite with the green sauce and tortilla, and I was just, like, blown away. I was like, holy shit, this is really fucking good. Had it, and I remember went go talk to him. He's like, yeah, it's just salt and pepper. I was like, okay, cool. Seems easy enough. Went home. I think I had bought like a Acorn grill at the time, which was like the Kamado cheap version. Just messing around with grilling here and there. I was like, all right, I went to go get a halal brisket because I was going to have all my family and friends over, and some of them only eat halal. I'll eat all beef. Chicken, lamb, it doesn't really matter. Anything but pork, I'll eat it. It doesn't have to be halal. So I went and got this brisket, and I remember I went to the butcher, the halal store, and their meat selection's pretty slim pickings. You know, probably select, maybe no grade. Anyway, he pulled out a brisket. I was like, yeah, it looks like a brisket. And I took it home, looked at some videos online, cooked it, and I was like, okay, got all excited, cut into it. And I remember when I first cut into it, because I didn't know about resting or anything like that, and all the juices came in. I was like, oh, hell yeah, it's super juicy. Ate it and it was super dry. I was like, this isn't what I had at Joe's.
Well, and those Kamados are clay and ceramic, which is like a tandoori grill,
yeah,
right? So
yeah,
there is kind
sure.
of that connection, which is kind of interesting. But and people have done good briskets on them. But
I eventually did get really good briskets out of them, like 3 years later. But yeah, that's kind of what sparked the interest. And, you know, cooked them a few times here and there, and just like, figured I was like, man, it's good, but it's not anywhere close to what I had, you know. And so just kind of tinkering with it here and there. And then I remember I don't remember who, somebody had posted about that Dylan was doing classes or Goldie's or whatever.
I'm sure it was us.
Yeah. Somebody, it might have been. And I remember I did some, like, because at the time I think it was like $1,000 or something. Like, I was like, man, I don't know if I want to spend $1,000 just to go learn to cook a brisket. And then I did some homework and asked some people who had taken it, and they're like, yeah, it's super legit. They'll do follow-ups, this and that, blah, blah. And I was like, all right,
and at
cool.
that time, there was very few people doing brisket classes.
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
it wasn't
no,
something
anybody,
that was everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that was like, yeah, come do like a full one-day class start to finish with us. Yeah.
Dylan and Goldie's, and now there's many more, but it changed the shape of barbecue because of the knowledge that they shared.
100%.
And you took that first class that you had with Dylan, and that you learned some of the basics, I think.
I remember I was there, I was just so hyped to be there, and he was just telling me all the information. In my mind I was like, yeah, I'll remember all this. He's like, hey, if you want to get your phone out and record it, you can. I was like, oh, really? He's like, yeah. So I remember, and I've watched those videos like a lot throughout the years, and so, you know, it was just really fun kind of just learning that whole experience. And then, of course...
And you're cooking on the grill that we're sitting next... Or the pit we're sitting next
yeah,
to.
Yeah, and this is the same pit. Yeah, it's the same pit in 2019 that I cooked with Dylan. And, of course, met Nupon, Jalen, Lane. I think Johnny was not... I didn't meet him the first time that I went there. But, yeah, I met all of them, and they were all super cool. You know, and I remember they were like, do you want to open up a restaurant or whatever? I was like, no, I'm just doing it for fun. You know, I just kind of want to learn, want to cook it. But, I mean, look at me now. So, I don't know. Take it how you want. It just, you know, it was meant to be. And I remember just taking the class, and I went and bought a brisket the next day. I was like, oh, I'm going to cook the brisket. And, of course, I cooked it. I mean, it was better, but it was nowhere near the brisket that he cooked in the class. You know, because they would serve a brisket in the class, too, to show you how to slice it. And then take a brisket home too. So I mean, it was a good deal. So that pretty much just went down the rabbit hole of that. 2019, just cooking here and there. I mean, the furniture business was taking up the time. That's what I had to do. It was strictly a hobby. And then 2020, the Leroy and Lewis was doing the class. I think it was like the first class or whatever. And you had to email them and this and that, and I did it and everything, and they're like, yeah, you can come down. And at the time it was like $500. It was super, like, very reasonable, because it was like 3 days and they fed you and taught you everything, and they're like, we just made a trip out of it, you know. And then of course COVID hit, and we were forced, well, I guess there's a gray line, it depends, some people stayed open, some didn't. We closed for 6 weeks, and I had bought a chud pit at the time from Brad, and I had that at home, and
the backyard
offset.
Yeah,
the seven. Yeah. I think it was a 60 gallon pit or something, and just got to cook on there for just, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it was that we were closed. But then we opened up, and of course furniture was like gold. We could not keep anything in stock; like, it was just crazy busy. So it kind of took a back burner again. I just didn't get around to it, and then. I don't remember. I would try to barbecue was always on my mind. There's always something about it. And then I think I would always tell Lane, I'd be like, man, if you ever need any help or anything, just let me know, this and that. And I think Johnny and Chuck were going to Egypt or something, or something happened. I don't remember. He's like, hey, if you want to come, you can come.
Yeah, there was a consulting gig.
They were doing something, and I remember I went.
And I think the Sarah Blaskovich article came out while Johnny and Chuck were in Egypt, and so that was kind of one of the first big boosts to their business. I think we interviewed Jalen Lane and Nupon at the time.
Yeah,
like literally, like we didn't plan it this way, but literally after the weekend after that came out. And they were so short-staffed at the restaurant at that time because, I mean, obviously you don't need a huge staff during COVID when everything's to go. And then the article came out, and those guys were probably, if you were willing to help, they were probably very, very grateful for your help at the time.
And so I would go there during the week, and like I said, it was still very casual. I would go for a couple of weeks, not go for a month. And it was always just like stuff that was during the week, because weekends for us, furniture, retail, busy days. Can't take off for those days. So it was always just, you know, starting with the trimming, just seeing sausage and just seeing like the back end stuff that nobody really gets to see, but in my opinion is like the important stuff. So just started with that, and like I said, it was very, very casual. It was like, you know, go a couple of days, don't go for a month, and you know, it stayed like that for, you know, the 2020 and 21 for the most part. 21 a little bit, once like the stimulus checks, everything started to settle down, it business became more manageable, so I was able to go to Goldie's like more. But yeah, I mean, it just stayed there, and then just kind of once we sold it and I got out, and that's when I asked, I was like, hey, like, I can come whenever or wherever, you know, like whenever I'm like open. And that's when Lane, Johnny were just like, yeah, like you can come, you know, like these days or whatever, and started trimming with them, and just going through everything. I want to say I've done everything there minus cook the pork ribs or anything pork related. I will give like a lot of respect to Goldie's, because I did go to try to get jobs at different places. Like, not even jobs, I just wanted like experience. I just wanted to do something, but it always was a hiccup where it's like, well, sorry, I can't really do the pork stuff. But even like I was there, well, the whole time that I was there, it never made me like touch pork, do anything with pork. Even if pork was in the fridge in a packet, they would like get it out themselves, you know, like there was always. So I mean, I have so much respect for them that they you know, as a business, like, that's not an efficient like employee or an asset. You know, if you have somebody who can't really do half the stuff, then it's like, I don't know if this can work. But you know, it was never like that. Well, it's like, all right, well, that's fine, we can do, there's other stuff that you can do, you know, like that you can help us with. And so, you know, just started with that. And after, you know, once we sold in 2022 is when I, you know, really got to dig my feet in and, you know, was on a schedule, so to speak, of, you know, like barbecue. And since then, it's just been barbecue, really.
So from the classes where you're doing kind of a limited amount of volume to Goldie's where you're cooking more and you're getting to see the difference as each brisket comes out and as each rack of, well, not pork ribs, but beef ribs and the sausage, was there what would you say that you learned from that Goldie's experience versus the class experience? Like what types of things do you learn in a business?
I think just repetition, like knowing how hard it really is. Like a lot of people, oh, I can go on YouTube. I mean, and you can go on YouTube and make a brisket like 90% there, like just from watching videos. But I think it's like that repetition.
It's not impossible to cook one brisket, but to cook 10 or 20 a day every day.
Well, it's like when you say cook, it's like trim 20, season 20, load 20, wrap 20, rest. You know, like everything gets. It might seem easy, but once you get into it, it's like, dang, this is like a lot of practice, a lot of work. So I would say like that was like very important to me, because like if I didn't do that, maybe it would have burned me out. Like if I just went out and like opened, like I say that to myself, like I wanted to open, like I, like when I sold, like I thought I was going to be at Goldie's a couple of months. Like I was like, oh, I'll learn and then, you know, be out of my way and, you know, do whatever I need to do. But you know, a year and a half later, almost 2 years later, it's still like I'm so happy and grateful and thankful. Like I got to experience that. Not even like me, just like being greedy like myself, but just, man, everybody that works there is like cool as shit. You know, like it's the environment is super dope. Everybody has something different. Like there's different approaches to everything, and every approach is right. There's no wrong approach, but it just opens up like your mindset. You know, like there's a lot of talent there, and it's just. It gets you ready for if you want to open up a barbecue business. And then like just like smaller details. I mean, Dylan's class and Dylan Lane, all them, they were all there for the class. I mean, you learn a lot, but there's only so much information you can retain, muscle memory that you can do in a class. You know, it's just doing it over and over that really brings it out or like gets into your system.
Yeah, I mean, a one-day class or even a 2 or 3 day class is an introduction to the fundamentals, but actually applying that knowledge in a day-in, day-out basis, it's kind of the difference between the glamour of barbecue and the business of barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's very easy to look from the outside and say, look at how popular this is, or look at the line this person, you know, this business has.
Yeah.
But to see the actual ins and outs of what goes into producing a product or a full menu that feeds that line day in and day out and makes those customers happy day in, day out, it's night and day. I mean, it's something you'll never learn in a class. You only learn from doing what you did, spending all that time there.
100%.
When you first started thinking of, you know, this will eventually become something I make my own business, was the thought to always stay in this Dallas-Fort Worth area? Because this area over the last couple of years, the barbecue boom that's happened here is amazing. Was it always the plan to stay here and do it?
Yeah. I wasn't gonna go move for barbecue. Like I liked it, but like my family's here. Like everything is here. Like I'm not gonna go just to go do barbecue. You know, I love it. Like that's what I'm doing. But it's not to that point to where I would wanna to move to go just to do barbecue. You know, like it would have, like the circumstances would have to be beyond just barbecue.
As you started putting your menu together and as you have it today, let's talk a little bit about the cultural influences and some of the decisions you made with the items. I believe you went to Pakistan in the summers with your family sometimes as well.
Yeah. My parents, super cultural, like super culture. I remember growing up, they'd always be like, oh, when you're home, you have to speak Urdu. And like, oh, dang it, I don't have to speak this. You don't speak English. But they would always take us to Pakistan in the summers. At the time, I dreaded it because it was like, oh man, because the flight's super long. It's like it takes a day to get there. And then like when you get there, because the water, everything is different, you get sick no matter how cautious you are. The water, the food, everything is different. It just takes your body time to adjust. And so just being sick and stuff for that first like week, it'd just be like, oh, I don't really want to go. But when you're there, you're like, oh heck yeah, I don't want to leave. And so we would just go back every year. My grandparents have a house over there. So, you know, just seeing a different world, you know, seeing our culture, seeing, like, being appreciative of things. Like, living in America, developed country, we take everything for granted. Like, basic living standards. Water, clean running water, hot water, cold, you know, like, all those, electricity, everything, roads, everything is, like, a luxury item unless you're, you know, if you're in a developing country, these things are luxury items. They're not just items that you have. So it almost, like, makes you feel, like, more appreciative of, like, where you are. Because I feel like in life, like, if you keep looking ahead and, like, ahead at better new things, you're never really happy. You're just not content, you know? You're just like, oh, I need this. Like, you know, you could be like, oh, I want $1 million. You make $1 million, you're like, no, I need 10. There's not really any contentment in life. But when you look at people below you, or, like, not even look at them, but if you just see people like that, it makes your life, like, way more, like, appreciative, at least for me. You know, like, if I ever think, like, my life is terrible, I can open up the internet and look at 100 different things and be like, you know what, never mind. My life is freaking A1. I got first world problems. You know, I'm trying to think of, oh, how I can do this, how I can do that. Like, these people are thinking of how they're going to survive. How are they going to get, like, you know, just water, medication. Like, you know, these things are luxury items. And so, you know, just the cultural aspect was great, but I think just life lessons of being appreciative of, like, what you have. It can always be worse. You know, just things like that that I think really, to this day, that I do cherish. I do love that about it.
From seasonings to flavors and maybe cooking a lot, there's a lot of road food over there as well. Was there anything that kind of stuck with you
memorably?
Thank you. Just had a stroke on the air. Is there anything that struck with you memorably that kind of you're adding into your menu from those trips?
The tandoori turkey, 100%. Like, that's just, that and the raita, I would say, is like, and the seed kebab sausage. I would say those three items are, like, embedded in me. Kind of just because, like I was saying, that's what we grew up eating. So I would say those, but, like, the other items, like, those I would say is, like, has, I don't want to really say fusion, but it has, like, a good mix. Like, I think it has a good balance of Texas and Pakistan in it. The other items I would say are more skewed, like, the sides are more skewed towards Pakistani sides, and the brisket and that stuff is, like, you know, more Texas-like. The seasoning, it does have some, like, unique, like, seasoning in it, but I would say those three other items are the ones that are really, like, the I guess the perfect combo, or, like, the perfect marriage, really.
So one, I mean, I think two of the things that Pakistani cuisine and Texas barbecue kind of have in common is the aromatics of them. Like, Texas barbecue, you know it when you smell it.
Yeah.
You know, that it's that smell that kind of draws you in. Not even just Texas barbecue, but even, like, Carolina's, the direct heat of, you know, fat dripping on coals. But, like, it's those sensory overload experiences. And Pakistani cuisine is very much like that. You smell it even before you taste it. And it kind of gets, you know, it gets you excited to taste what you're about to eat.
Yeah, a lot of bold flavors.
A lot of bold flavors, you know, a lot of very pungent flavors. And in modern Texas barbecue, you know, we always think of salt and pepper and Lowry's and garlic and et cetera. What are kind of the signature spices of Pakistani cuisine for you?
I would say, man, there's, like, so many different ones in there. I would say, like, probably, like, coriander, Kashmiri pepper, cumin, ginger, garlic, you know, and then you have your other, like, fragrant or like, just aromatics, fragrant, whatever it is, whole cumin, the things that are, like, very native to the subcontinent. I would say those are probably, like,
one of the most interesting things on the plate today were your pickled onions, and you got that fennel anise flavor in those onions.
Yeah.
And it was so unique. As soon as you taste it, you're like, okay, this, we're so used to the pickled onions being on the barbecue tray these days, but it was such a different spin on it, if you will. It wasn't your signature Texas pickled onion. It was more the aromatic flavors of it. It was really cool to get something that was familiar but different and at the same time. So that was just one of the things that we kind of geeked out on as we were eating today. Let's talk a little bit more about the menu itself, because that was one of the things that excited us before we came to eat, when we got to eat it. It's a pared down menu. You've started off, you know, with a focused menu of, I think it's what, four meats, three sides, and dessert right now. What went into the decision of this was going to be the menu that you start Sabra with?
Well, I wanted to have like 15 different things, but then Lane was like, I don't know if you really want to do that. And now I'm like thinking, dang, I should have like two sides. No, I'm joking. But no, it was just things that like work together. Like, you know, do you want me to go over like the menu or something?
Well, I mean, one that stands out to me is the kebab sausage, because it's unique. But it still has the Texas aspect to it.
Yeah.
So there's familiarity and some excitement to it both.
So the kebab sausage, how that kind of came about was in the world, like sausage is a form of preservation. And in the Muslim world, I'm not even saying in Pakistan, but in the Muslim world, I don't ever, like, besides like a merguez sausage, I've never heard of a sausage from a country before. They don't do it. Everybody does the kebabs and stuff. And so I was like, man, like, why wouldn't a kebab, like, if you did, like, the same kebab but in the sausage, it's more foolproof. You know, a Sikh kebab sausage, you have to have a very skilled cook because the fat renders out super quick, like, unless they don't know what they're doing. So I was like, why couldn't I just do that, like, in the sausage? So it's got all the flavors of a Sikh kebab, but it's almost foolproof of all the juices staying in. Plus, like, the Texas part of it, of, like, it's just a really well-made sausage. You know, like, the sausage techniques are Texas sausage techniques, but just like, you know, paired down with the flavor or the taste of a Sikh kebab sausage. So I think it was just, I mean, it is a sausage, but it's just like, I don't know how to really explain it. It just works really well.
And it's got lamb casings and it's halal. So
yeah,
it obviously fits with not just the theme, but with kind of the requirements of the menu.
Yeah.
Another one that jumped out at me, again, with that familiarity and kind of the uniqueness, was the tandoori turkey.
Yeah. So turkey, not a very common poultry dish in Pakistan. They have turkeys, but I've never actually had a turkey in Pakistan. But, I mean, tandoori is poultry in Pakistan. Like, that is, like, they have different versions. They do, like, Haryali chicken, green chicken. Like, there's different variations, but tandoori chicken is the jam there. And, you know, growing up, it's super spicy, and, like, you know, you're dipping your raita in the naan, and just, like, it's just enjoyable. It's spicy, but you want to keep eating it. And so, like, when I came to poultry dish, like, it made sense. I don't know what else I could do with it. You know, I mean, the only difference is, like, traditionally they marinated in yogurt and stuff. We're not doing any of that. So ours is more like dry rub. And they do that yogurt for tenderness too. So it is like for that reason that they do it. So, you know, it's our version. We use the dry rub. It is very traditional. You know, it's got your lemongrass, Kashmiri peppers, mango powder. Like there's different things in there that, you know, traditionally that goes into it. And so it's just, you know, it's the seasonings of Pakistan, but we cook the turkey exactly how we do in Turkey, in Pakistan, in Texas, I'm sorry. So it's like a turkey breast, you know, we season it with the rub, cook it on the smoker, when it's done, wrap it in butter, and it's done, you know. So
the flavors are, like I said, the spices are subtle. It's not like, it's not like this in your face flavor, but it's nice because it's different, but again, like I said, it's different but familiar.
Yeah, we toned down the spice a little bit just because we didn't want, you know, everybody's taste buds to be thrown off by eating everything else. So I think we're in the right direction.
So, you know, obviously your business is still in its infancy. I mean, you haven't been open very long. What's been the early reception and feedback that you've gotten from customers?
I think the feedback and reception's been really good. It hasn't really been what I expected. And when I say that, like, in a good way, I didn't expect so many of the Muslim community to come out. And it's not because it's like barbecue or, you know, just something different. I just didn't think that they would be open to something like that, you know? So I think for me, it's like a little bit of both sides. So the Pakistani community, for them, barbecue is so new because they don't eat it out. So it's almost like they get to try that for the first time, but fairly new to them. And then I've noticed, like, people that aren't from Pakistan, they come and, like, the sides kind of intrigue them. So it's like kind of catching a little bit of both. I thought it would be, like, more dominant towards, like, people that are into barbecue more, but I would say like the Muslim community definitely has come out and like.
Is there a large Muslim community in this area?
I don't know if Fort Worth so much does, but Dallas Fort Worth has a huge like a huge population of Muslims in it. Yeah, like a massive, massive community, probably the size of Houston, probably or close to it.
And if you lived in Texas these last 5 years, whether you're able to eat it or not, you've been beaten over the head with Texas barbecue talk everywhere you turn.
Yeah,
and they may not like, again, they may not have felt comfortable going to a lot of Texas barbecue restaurants because of the pork aspect, and depending on what they're, you know, what they follow or don't follow, they may not be able to go to a place and safely order everything on the menu and not have any worries that it's going to conflict with their dietary restrictions. Yeah. So
during COVID, Goldie's actually did. So I had talked, there's this group called Halal Barbecue Pitmasters. They do some cool rubs, and it's just like a group of guys. They're not pitmasters, like literally, but like, you know, all very well educated doctors, engineers, whatever, but they're just into barbecue. And luckily, Goldie's, Lane, Jalen, all them, they were like, yeah, you know, let's do a halal day one day. And so after service, I forget what day it was, either Saturday, Sunday, they were like, you know, after two, it was just like this group. It was during COVID. It was like pre-orders. Like people had said like, hey, we want this X amount. I forget how many briskets they did. I want to say 20 briskets. And the very first guy that got the sample bite, he had told me, he's like, I wanted a pound. He took a sample bite and bought 5 pounds. I don't know. You'd have to ask Lane and them. I don't know if they've sold that many briskets that fast. Just because people have never had it. But it was in their mind. They're like, okay, cool. This is halal. They did it for us. You know, they get to see everything. Like, the smokers were all... Everything was cleaned out. And it was just like... You know, for that group, they still talk about it. You know, they're just like, man, we need to have that day again. Like a Goldie's day. You know? And so it's nice just seeing, like... I think from both sides, you know, you see people that aren't familiar with Pakistani food that have Pakistani food. They're like, whoa, that's really good. And then you have people that haven't had Texas barbecue before or very limited exposure to it, and they have it, and they're blown away. Mm. So it's almost like a match made in heaven, to where you kind of get the both, you know, best of both worlds, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, for so many years, Texas played in such a narrow space of what Texas barbecue was. And that limited their customer base, honestly, not just from dietary restrictions, but there may be people that didn't want just those three meats or just those three staple sides that a lot of times came out of a Cisco tub, you know. So the growth in barbecue, both in menu expansion, cultural expansion, I think has opened doors for a lot of people, customer wise and business wise, to be able to do more things than you couldn't do 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah,
it's exciting. I mean, for nerds like us, it's exciting just because we're tired of eating the same brisket, ribs, and sausage everywhere. But for just the general public, it's great to have more options of different flavors. And so, I mean, I eat some form of Middle Eastern food pretty much every week, but I never get to eat it with barbecue. So it's like kind of my two worlds colliding from a culinary standpoint. It's a lot of fun for me. And at the end of the day, I'm selfish and I just want good food.
And speaking of the end of the day, we're getting towards the end of this, but I do want to touch on dessert and then kind of the roadmap for what you want to do. But let's talk about the dessert. It's kind of a mildly sweet carrot based dessert, correct?
Yeah, so it's a we call it gajrela, and in Pakistan, like everything is seasonal there. You don't get everything available throughout the year, so what you have is what you have. Carrots is a winter dessert, and and they're very sweet over there just because like you get them in that season. So I think the best description to it would be like maybe a carrot pudding. They're pretty much carrots cooked in milk, saffron, cardamom, sugar, just cooked down to kind of give it that, you know, that kind of pudding texture to it. And then we have some roasted nuts that go into it.
All those nuts were super tender too.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Heck yeah.
Because I was expecting like this crunch, and no, it was just like this nice, soft flavor that added.
Yeah, I mean,
to
it was still a textural difference from the carrots
for
themselves,
sure.
But yeah, it was.
I just started adding those last week actually. So last week I had actually cooked the carrots with the nuts, but they became like straight like too soggy. So today we cooked, or not today, but like we added the nuts like an hour before service to kind of not crazy crispy or crunchy, but like have some sort of like bite to them, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the dessert. What was the second question?
So what's kind of the, you know, as you get your feet wet, you get more used to the operation of the business, are there any sort of menu expansion ideas that you want to share right now? If you don't, that's fine too. But like, what do you see short term and long term for a suburb?
I would say short term, probably like 6 months to a year. there's maybe like a few menu items that, like, so we have a burnt end nahari. It's not quite there yet, but it's, that's like one dish that it's, that's going to be like the next dish that comes onto the menu, which is, in my opinion, that is like the perfect Pakistani Texas dish, because nahari is the dish of Pakistan, and brisket, burnt ends are as Texas as you can get, you know. So we'll do like the burnt ends, and then we'll put them in it, like with the nahari, which is like a curry based kind of like dish. It's kind of spicy. It's got, I don't know, it's really good. So we've been messing around with that. That's going to be like the next item on there. And then other than that, like, I don't really have any other, like, I have some ideas in the back of my mind of like what menu items I would want to put on there. But I think there'll be like more like seasonal stuff. I don't think I'll, like, I'm not going to expand, like, the menu will always be small. There's not like, oh, I'm going to add like five more sides. And after, like, if I put some sides on there, there'll be a side that I'll take off. And then same thing in the summers, you know, the fruit jack kachumbar, I'm sure that in a summer day is going to smack. And
that was the first thing I said when we eat the fruit shot today. I was like, can you imagine this when it's like super hot outside? Yeah. Like, that's such a perfect summer barbecue.
And I mean, it goes perfect with like, you know, and that comes from like fasting. You know, you fast the whole day and it's easy. Like, you, like, 'cause they put fried food, everything in front of you, but you have that fruit, which is, I mean, it's super delicious, but it's also like health benefits, right? You get all that sweetness, that saltiness, all without like bloating yourself, you know, because you've been deprived of food all day. Yeah. So that's really, you know, like, everything has a reason, like where it's come from.
And that's super smart. And we see that, we're seeing it more with barbecue menus, but there's still some barbecue menus where even if everything on the menu is delicious, sometimes it just doesn't work well with the other things on the menu.
Yeah.
Like, when you've got rich fatty meats, you know, a refreshing side, like a summer dish, like a fruit shot, is good next to like succulent brisket. So if you get the, you know, if you get those two things together, they play well. But if you have, you know, a super heavy side next to a super heavy fatty brisket, but two bites into both of them, you're almost tired of eating.
Yeah.
So it's nice.
I do
to have
want
those
people
breaks.
To enjoy the whole meal. I don't want them to like almost feel like if it's just a bite or two, it's almost like competition style where it's just like,
right,
oh cool, I got my bite and you know I'm done with it. So I do definitely want it to be like the whole meal.
Yeah. You know, well, you can tell the thought that went into the menu. Like, when you see it on the plate, like, you can see the thought and how everything kind of plays together and works together from the raita to the Sikh kebab sausages. The lamb sausage that you were sampling out today was extremely good, too. So
awesome.
We're really excited to see what the future is going to be for you and for Sabar Barbecue. This, again, we're just thrilled to see the growth that we're seeing in barbecue and not just sticking to one format.
Yeah. One thing that I do want to do is like there's a lot of Muslim countries in the world where people have never had cuisines from them, like, ever. It's kind of crazy. Like, there's 2 or 3 billion Muslims in the world, crazy countries that have amazing food. One thing I do want to do, so the Sichuan lamb ribs, those are obviously an art from Pakistan. Those are like Xi'an from the Xi'an region in China, where the Uyghur population is, who have settled there from Turkey when the Silk Road and all that trade was happening. So that's where all that cumin, all that like influence comes. So I want to showcase like not like that. That will be one thing that always like rotates around. There will always be like some sort of special that I want to do that's from like a specific country that, not necessarily saying like the same dish, but like an influence from them, you know, like they don't cook lamb ribs in Xi'an in the Muslim quarters, you know, they skewer up the meat, you know, lamb fat, heavy hand of cumin, Sichuan over the coals, you know, and that's pretty much what we do. Like, we cook the lamb ribs really hot. It's got the same seasonings, like, or at least our version of the seasonings. So that's one thing I would like to do is like, you know, different regions of the Muslim world where I can like take, you know, it could be a kebab, it could be, you know, there's so many different variations to it that I would like to, you know, incorporate onto my menu and have like seasonally or something onto the menu.
One last quick question, because it just came to me. Do you think there'll ever be any direct heat?
Yeah,
items
I want
to
do.
Because I know that's
I do want to do that.
That's so traditional to what you grew up
with. I do want
to
do that. I want to really kind of grow into it. I don't want to have like too many things come up like all together. But yeah, no, I would love to do that. Like chicken, like an actual tandoori chicken, like an actual one would be really good.
Yeah.
Or like a just different chicken or just poultry dishes, like a lamb or something. Just different dishes that we can do on a direct heat pit. Yeah, I would love to do that. Just
one last thing, hours and location for people that are listening.
So we're located, so our address is 194 Bryan Avenue, Fort Worth, Texas. On the GPS, it shows it not where we really are because it's hard to get Google to change, like, the trailer address. But we're literally located on the corner of Main and Vickery. We're open on Saturdays only from 11 to sold out. I've only been open 4 weeks, so I don't really have a really good, like, history to tell you what time we sell out. But it's been between 1 and 2. That we normally sell out, and I hope, you know, y'all come out and visit us.
Absolutely. I mean, we can't recommend it enough. We've had a lot of barbecue for a lot of years. We've never had the plate that we had today, and everything worked well. And more, I won't say most importantly, but important that not only did the food work well, but every single item from a barbecue standpoint was cooked extremely well.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. That means a lot.
And that's fantastic, because when we first started seeing the growth in barbecue, sometimes that might have been lacking even if the flavor was there. But you had the flavors today. You had the proper meat cooking today. It was an exceptional meal.
I think that's important, like, to, like, execute those things too. Like, you just don't want to do something just because it's different. Like, you need, like, a sausage, for instance, like, it has its, like, technique to it. Like, you can't, like, some people you see post online and they'll do the most, like, crazy looking things, and then they'll post it and it's like, man, that looks like, it sounds really good, but it would have been way better if you would have actually nailed the technique versus, like, just being a different flavor.
Right. He's talking about me.
He'd be right. But Brandon's done some weird sausages. But no, I 100% agree with what you're saying. There's a place for everything in the barbecue world.
Yeah, 100%.
But honoring the technique and honoring the actual cooking practice while incorporating flavor and creativity is, I think those two things should go hand in hand and not one or the other.
I mean, Sabar is a great way to experience both Texas barbecue and Pakistani culture. Come out on Saturdays. As time goes, maybe you'll extend those hours or extend those days, which would be phenomenal. But in the meantime, come out and support him on Saturday. And thank you very much.
Thanks, y'all, for having me.